Good morning. Today is Monday, March the 19th. Joining us this morning is the bank dude, Mr. Dalby. Hey, and it's almost spring.
We're getting there, huh? It's hard to believe, huh?
In so many ways. Unless, of course, you look outside. Do you have Excuse a springy me. Quote?
No, I don't. But this is from Oscar Wilde. Life is far too important a thing to ever talk seriously about.
Yeah, he kind of lived up to that mantra, didn't he?
Yeah.
Time after time after time. So what are you hearing out there in the banking industry? What's the big challenge of the industry?
Our industry is still, the number one challenge in the banking industry is cybersecurity. And so that's very, very important, top of mind. With all the use of online banking systems, mobile systems, and so forth, you got to stay right on top of that. And so that's probably the number one thing that we look at as far as concerns go long term.
Facebook, things like that coming in through the social media, or are you talking about the harder targets, so to speak?
Well, generally the excuse me, I apologize. Generally, the challenge...
He's not contagious, he
right?
says.
Yeah, yeah. So. You just don't kiss me on the lips, right?
Yeah, well, you know, that one even hadn't entered the old mind.
Yeah,
thought.
Funny. That rarely happens. Yeah. Yeah, now that you mention it. Generally, the biggest challenge with cybersecurity is not your software or hardware systems, because, you know, that is relatively easy to put in. Just got to spend the money on it. The harder part is the social engineering is what they call it, and so most of the time that we see significant hacks in the system is generally because somebody has phished an employee, gotten information, got into the system that way.
So somebody opened the door, so to speak.
Exactly, and that's why the social side of it is the most difficult, challenging part of cybersecurity.
But now that is in-house and staff rather than me doing something stupid, right? Or can they come in through a customer, let's say I have something open on the machine, on the computer, and I go to visit my account at the bank, can they go zing zing, connect the dots, and come sliding in through the slide door?
I apologize, I got that nasty cough, so I'm doing my best I can to move away from the microphone.
Yeah, I didn't want to see Jennifer today anyway. So.
Yeah, no. She had trouble getting in on her flight on Friday, so I haven't seen her for a week.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so otherwise I would have sent her in.
There's another triggering clue for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, no kisses and no Jennifer. Okay,
there you go. We're 0 for 2.
Yeah, yeah.
So, your question was, does the consumer have issues, or could we
be the weak link?
Exactly, and the answer to that is absolutely yes. We've seen a case where somebody gave their employee access to their online banking system to do the banking. That was used then to wire a bunch of money out, and it ended up in a very, very large loss. We've seen cases in which,
but that was an overt action from staff.
Yeah,
being
correct.
Involved, not just me being uninformed as a consumer.
Correct, but you didn't, you gave them access to that, but you weren't checking your statements.
Okay.
And that's generally how it works in fraud cases where your bookkeeper or somebody, steals from you. The other one is...
Was that the staff member, though, doing something overtly or somebody...
No, it was a staff member doing something overtly.
Okay, so it wasn't somebody who just happened to be timing their... contact.
But the one that you can get caught on is the phishing attempts, phishing and whaling. Those are.
Hey, I'm a fish now. I'm officially not a whale anymore.
There you go. Yes. You are looking rather svelte.
Or minnow. Perhaps I'm in the minnow stage.
Yeah. At 6'11", yeah, it's hard to be a minnow. Yeah.
Well, I go just shore to shore.
Exactly. But. The way they catch you is, you get these emails, spam mails that, have a bank's logo on it and says, there's a problem with your card, click here. How many times you get those and you go, I don't have a card there. But all of a sudden, once they hit your bank and it says, oh, I do have a card there, we have this urge to click on it to see what the problem is. And you could be bringing anything from a virus into that to malware. They'll potentially ask you for identifying, to identify you, which means, you know, what's your social security number. So what they're doing is they're gleaming information from you.
I would imagine.
And then they steal your identity.
If they ask for more than the last four digits, which is pretty common, you know, the last four digits, right? I would think that would almost be like a red flag.
Most financial institutions will never ask you on an outbound email to give them any information. They will refer you to the website. And if you get any information from a financial institution that says, click here and give us this information, delete it. And if you actually have questions, call or log on to your bank's website and go look for yourself. Do not respond any of giving any information to an email message that you have received.
The financial institutions in our area that aren't the big boys, is it worth the people's time to try to get access to those smaller banks rather than going after the big boys?
Rarely will you get something that says Redwood Capital Bank because we're a small player. It's generally going to be Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. but you never know. You just never know.
Well, whether it's Bob's Gymnasium,
right?
You know, you still don't want to be silly.
So if you have a problem with us, we'll either call you or send you a letter. But we won't ask you to
or
respond
stop
to
by.
An email. Exactly.
Yeah. With Healthy John. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this lovely morning with Mr. Dalby. It's kind of like residual from the weekend.
I don't want to know.
Good. You know, neither do I.
Yeah, there you go.
Wells Fargo is kind of in the headlines. Again, I guess the feds are now starting to follow up on some of the activity that took place earlier and kind of expanding some of their investigation. When you hear things like that, where a financial institution is being investigated, do you go, good, because that'll build value and trust in the industry that there are overseers who are doing due diligence, that are paying attention, and consumer and marketplace confidence should go up? Or do you cringe a little bit and go, oh, gee, no, that it's somebody's doing something goofy, it's taking a chink out of the armor, and now all financial institutions are looked at a little bit as less secure, less professional?
Okay, well, all I can do is, my initial reaction to the news was, yes, good, because the industry needs to be trusted, and the industry, you know, that's who we are. I mean, people have, at least in historically, have looked at bankers as a place to get good, solid advice that, you know, is going to be unbiased and so forth, and that we're looking out for the best for our clients. And that's very, very important. And, you know, what happened in Wells Fargo, it's not like, you know, management didn't set out and say, hey, let's go out and deceive a bunch of people and open false accounts. What actually happened was, They set up goals, and those goals ended up with incentive programs that were lucrative enough that employees found a loophole in which they could create fake accounts or open fraudulent accounts and make their numbers and get their incentive payments. So the issue really, and if I understand it right, there were people fairly high up in the organization that were aware this was going on, but they had their own incentive program, so it was working for them. That's my understanding of it. And it's very easy to happen. And so I've always said when you're designing an incentive system, you want to make sure you're incenting the behavior you want. And oftentimes, incentive programs are designed in a way where you're actually incenting an employee to do something you really don't want. So just, you really got to structure them correctly. And then, of course, in this case, they just didn't monitor them. And it went up through the ranks, and people ignored it, and here we are.
I would imagine that for most, it's not designing an incentive program or commission program or things of that nature. It's the follow-up part. And there's a line a buddy of mine in the Midwest has, your employees respect what management inspects. Okay. I mean, that's a pretty...
Or inspect what you expect.
Yeah. I was trying to kind of...
You were doing the other side.
Expand it a little bit more so that, you know, those who hadn't heard it might have gotten the full flavor of it. But it's tough because a lot of managers also are in the production cycle somewhere. They're either a shift foreman, or they're out in handling the channels of distribution or sales or whatever it might happen to be. And that's where your focus and attention goes to rather than following up. And I don't know if it's a structural issue or if it's a staffing issue or a combination of only willing to work 12 to 14 hours a day issue.
Well, you have a number of them that are in there. You know, I think you've hit some real keys. One is in an organization the size of Wells Fargo or even our bank is big enough to do this, in which you have a separation of the authority, the sales authority, and the other side of it, which is the authentication and the approval. So we separate the sales side from the approval side, or the sales side from what we call when we back check our information. So you can separate.
So for a normal business, not you guys aren't normal, but yeah, you're bankers.
Right.
In a normal business, you'd have sales staff, and then you'd have bookkeeping or accounting.
Correct.
Or credit or
correct.
Whatever.
And so you have a separation. The people that are checking on the data are not the people that are incentive to create it. They're incented on other things if you want to incent them. Now, in a small organization, that's hard to do. You know, if you have one salesperson, you're giving them incentives, you know, you pretty much got to watch it yourself. Because you can't have that separation of duties. So that becomes a challenge. But usually in a small organization, if something's going sideways, you know it relatively quickly.
That would be called aging, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So as you're setting something up, if you don't, let's say if you are, oh, what do the feds call small business now? Is it 30 or 25 or 20 somewhere? Let's say it's 20. I think there's something magical about 20. Maybe it's labor law.
You're talking about employees?
Employees.
50 is the magic number.
Oh, that's the huge big number. Yeah, I know. I'm a little bit below that one. So you've got two or three sales folks, but your sales manager is also one of your sellers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's not uncommon.
As well as now the overseer. How do you structure something? And I suppose that's going to be the $95 question when we come back. How do you set up a business so that you get that healthy separation, but you're also keeping the doors open next week? Oh, he laughs. That evil laugh. Okay. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from John Dolly.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit DecadeOfDifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank dude, John Dalby from Redwood Capital. Talk Shop presented by Redex, CDH Painting, American Ag Credit, and by Lolita Cheese Company. John, the concept of trying to structure a business so that it's functional, it's efficient, it's effective, but you've got checks and balances, is probably a whole specialty unto itself. You know, if let's say if you've got that threshold of 10 or less employees or staff members, okay, that's going to be kind of halfway dicey in most types of businesses. Maybe plenty if you're like lawn mowing or something that's single right. topic, single use. You know, I mean, how do you set up a business to have those checks and balances in the most basic sense as well as the more complicated ones?
Right. So in a smaller business, you just have to be attentive to what's actually happening. And so generally what we've seen in cases in which there was employee theft in a small business, it was when, you know, the owner is a craftsman or, skilled in some way.
The doer.
Right, the doer.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a contractor. It could be,
doctor, dentist, lawyer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what they want to do is their craft, and they don't want to run the business. And so they turn that over to an individual, but don't check on what's going on, meaning, you know, I let them write the checks. I let them reconcile the checking account. You need to be involved in that process one way or another, either signing all the checks or reconciling the accounts. You need to be involved in one way or another so that you're seeing what is happening. And, you know, that's not just for your safety, but it's also for the safety of the employee, because they may be doing something inadvertently wrong, and it may go on for a long period of time. And boy, they're going to feel awful if, you know, they were paying the wrong thing for the wrong person for, you know, whatever the issue is.
Now, when the books are done at the accountant, presuming that an accountant would be used rather than using your bookkeeper to do your taxes,
right,
it would be kind of a closed loop there. Wouldn't a lot of that stuff get caught or questions be asked?
No, it could. I'm not saying it wouldn't. But a lot of things, you know, like one of the great ones is your PG&E bill. So what do I do is your the company's PG&E bill is $1,500. My personal one is $300. So I put them together and I write a check for $1,800 to PG&E.
Okay.
The accountant's not going to pick that up because they're just going to see the entry PG&E. They're not going to check every entry against the billings.
So it's sheer volume.
Well, no, they're looking at the numbers you give them, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're having them audit your financials, and you're going to pay dearly for that service. So if the bookkeeper puts the wrong numbers in to the system, and the checks and balances aren't there, then that's the number the accountant's going to get. Now, that'd be a great question to ask Bill really? McCauley when he's on next.
Now, I guess, if it's a closed loop, because that's what would be going into whatever your software program is, and you're just putting in that number. But wouldn't there be confusion at the vendor, at PG&E? Why are you continually overpaying?
No, because they're going to get a check for $1,800, but there's two bills on there. So they're going to $1,500 goes to yours and $300. So basically they paid their own PG&E bill by putting them together.
And that doesn't trigger something, you know,
at PG&E? No, it's very common for people to pay multiple bills with one check. For instance,
for multiple businesses?
Well, for instance, we have multiple locations.
Right.
So we might get three different PG&E bills, and we may pay them with one check.
I mean, rather than having silos for each location and being able to track it that way.
So, you know, I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but that's an example.
It's a pretty common one for those dealing with it.
Some of them just blatantly write checks. I heard of a case, not in Humboldt County, in which a signer on the account in a very, very large organization went out and went to the bank and got cashier's checks. Okay. And just, you know, walked to the counter with it because he could sign on the account, got a cashier's check, went and bought himself a car, and then he went and bought himself a house.
That was a large check, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, if you can imagine.
Or a small rural town in somewhere, yeah.
Right, okay. But he was also involved in the accounting, so he just covered it up and got away with it for years and years. It happens. You know, I read about it. I wasn't involved in this one at all, either one, actually, but I didn't have any firsthand information just reading about it. You know, another employee who was a controller, you know, was buying all kinds of stuff for himself, and the company was paying for it. Because they didn't have those checks and balances. And so you just got to be careful. And it could be if you're a small business person, just looking at, you know, the cleared checks or looking at your statement from time to time just to make sure. And if you have a question, where'd that come from? You know, just go ask. You know, why do we pay so-and-so such? And make sure that you get the satisfactory answer.
A buddy of mine who had some stations in Massachusetts was not the bookkeeper. And Phil would spend a lot of time off site, you know, doing different stuff. He signed all the checks. And the bookkeeper would attach the bill to the unsigned check. Everything was filled in except for that, so that he could do a quick review.
Correct.
Going through. Is that one of the more simpler approaches as well?
Yeah, it's actually what we do at the bank. I sign the mass majority of all expense checks. It's we have our controller go through, somebody approves the payment, she creates the check, and I get the check and the bill together so I can review the bill if I so choose, and then I sign it, and then we have two signatures required for anything over a certain dollar amount.
So let me now ask you a question. As a small business guy, is that the best use of your time?
Absolutely. And if you think it's not, you need to take the time and spend, you know, it doesn't take that much time to go through and look at the checks that were signed. Even if it's online, you go online and just look at the checks and say, okay, what's that one? You click on it, you look at it and say, gee, why did we spend, you know, $1,500 on
that,
you know,
$600 PG&E
right.
bill, yeah.
Why did we write a check to Target? Yeah, exactly.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Fly Humboldt remind you that flying local is buying local and supports local jobs and investment. Fly Humboldt is a community-based coalition of businesses, organizations, and citizens dedicated to getting more flights to more destinations. We know that reliable and affordable air service is a critical part of a healthy community. For more information, visit flyhumboldt.org or find us on Facebook.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank dude, John Dalby. John, so if double-checking checks going out is one of the biggest, best ways for owner-operators to make sure everything's on the up and up. Are there other areas also that we should be paying attention to, or as employees, be asking for somebody just to double check my work, double check whatever it is?
You know, employee theft happens in so many different ways, and you know, we were talking about, you know, the ones with your bookkeeper, and those are things that you can put systems in place to make sure it doesn't happen. The other one is in, you know, where the revenue actually comes in and where the goods actually go out. And so
cash transactions.
Exactly. So if somebody pays cash, which happens quite a bit, you know, does that actually get put in the register? Is it rung up? You know, so it's very common for, you know, somebody to give change but didn't put it in the till or didn't put it in the register, then they just pocket that money. That can happen. Okay. The other one is letting you know, goods and services go out to your friends, you know.
Sampling.
Well, you know, so I have a coffee shop. Let me use that. Well, my buddy comes in and I'm the I'm at the clerk. Well, I give him a free cup of coffee. You know, because it's my buddy. That happens a lot. And so,
which isn't an issue if it's documented. And people know it's
right.
It's the fraud part.
Right. So it can happen in a lot of places, and really good people sometimes do these things. You just got to protect yourself.
That would be the camera over the cash register.
That works.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus the boss sitting up there on the chair looking
exactly.
down. Yeah,
yeah,
I understand that. Thanks for coming by.
So good to see you, Brian, and have a great week.
Hopefully you'll get better.
I hope so, too.
All righty, man. See everybody tomorrow.